This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast. A new episode available every single week. Available at thehollywoodoutsider.com, iTunes. We're on Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'll be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while we like to bring interviews with independent filmmakers, kind of giving insight into what goes into getting their films made, as well as insight into the respective film itself. This week, we're going to talk to Dina Hysel. She is the writer, producer, director of Ascent to Hell, a title so foreboding and gloom, you have to say it with a little oomph. You got to say, Ascent to Hell. You know, you got to say it like that. It follows Azura Sky as Kate. She's a real estate agent who is basically selling a factory. And the history of the factory is that in 1911, many garment workers were killed there. Now, there's a backstory. You learn about that within the film as the people end up being trapped in it. And then a ghost with a fire finger comes after everybody. Now, Ascent to Hell is now on video on demand and Blu-ray and DVD. And actually, I met Dina at South by Southwest. We had a great time there, actually. She's part of the Jamie Lannister story, which only a few people know. You're probably wondering what it is, but I'm not going to tell you here. And she's a wonderful person to talk to. We had a great time. So I asked her if she wanted to come by the show and talk about her movie and making films in Hollywood and what it's like to get a movie made now. It's a great conversation. I think she was just wonderful to talk to. I hope you guys enjoy it and follow her going forward. Without further ado, take a listen to our interview with producer, writer, and director of Ascent to Hell, Dina Hysel.
This is Dina.
Hey, Dina, it's Aaron.
Hey, Aaron, how are you?
I am great. How are you?
Good.
Where are you at? You're in California, right?
I'm in California, yeah.
How are things where you are right now?
They are wonderful. It is finally warm out here again, which is perfect. So yesterday was opening day. Was at the Dodgers all day. Excellent.
Really? So, nice.
Very nice.
That sounds like a great day. How are things since you got back from South by Southwest?
Things have been good, you know? How about you guys? You guys been good?
Yeah, things have been great. We had a great festival. I don't know about you. Did you do more of networking, or were you there more for seeing the sights, taking in the films and whatnot?
It was a good combination. You know, I was there for kind of a combination of things, because Annie, who was doing the PR on Ascent, she was like, if you come down there, it'll be easier to just be able to book all of a kind of press interviews and that kind of thing for you to be there, because that's where all the kind of independent press will be. So come down if you're available. So that's why I kind of went down there to do that. And she rocked it out for that. But then also got to just watch a bunch of great films and, you know, out of the festival, South By is the one that I really love to be able to go and just watch some awesome films too. So it's always inspiring to be around filmmakers that are doing great work on and really independent work. With so many festivals you go to, it's not, you know, festivals aren't independent work anymore, most of them. Mm-hmm. You're watching things that are coming out of being packaged out of CAA and WME and that kind of thing. You're watching these kind of like $20 million movies, and it's like, and it's great. You know, a lot of the Sundance movies are beautiful, but it's not scrappy filmmakers putting together their own things, you know? It's a lot of things that are already sold. They're already they already have their own life to it. But whereas South By is a lot of people who are still kind of independent artists doing what they want to do and kind of fighting for their work. And so that's always great to be around and see those projects.
Were there anything that really stood out to you? I mean, not to promote other people's work, but anything that you saw?
Are you kidding? I love promoting other people's work. Well, I mean, the trailer's out for it now, but I went and saw the footage to it, and that was amazing. You know, the trailer's out wide now, but we saw some of the footage that isn't in the trailer also.
Do you get a good look at the clown? Do you get a good look at Pennywise and what you saw?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That, and then also some of the footage from the Annabelle Origins.
Oh, nice.
Both look absolutely amazing. that was actually kind of my favorite thing that I got to go see. But you know, I'm a genre geek, so of course I loved that.
That's good.
Yeah, what did you see that you loved?
Well, I saw a lot of things that I love. MFA was easily my favorite one, I think, at the festival. And
I liked that.
Did
yeah.
you see it? Oh, it was great. I just did an interview with the director. It was fantastic. Yeah, it was a great movie.
I thought it was so well paced, you know, and I was concerned going in that it was going to be preachy, and it wasn't at all. Mm-hmm. It was really a great, great film. I enjoyed it so much.
Oh, me too. I'm glad I think it's going to find its footing. Too.
I think it is too. I think it's gonna find. I think it's gonna find an audience. I think it's gonna find a wider audience than people are expecting it to. Also,
yeah, I think so. I was comparing it to Get Out. I was telling somebody that it reminded me a lot of Get Out because you have a really, really divisive topic that you can talk to people. You can walk out, mm-hmm. be entertained, and still have a conversation about it, and not feel like it was preaching, like you said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, at the core, that's what genre films can do. And because, you know, you have this thing in genre film where people will go to watch it for the other parts of it because documentaries have a built-in audience, right? Mm-hmm. And people will go to watch an issue film, and those people aren't really the people that you need to walk out and be talking about those issues, because they would be talking about those issues anyway. And so in genre film, you have this really great opportunity to do something like Get Out or do something like MFA, where there's a different audience that can be exposed to something that maybe they wouldn't be talking about. And it's one of the things that I love, 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 love about that world, you know?
That's a really great point. I've never actually looked at it from that perspective. Genre is a way to reach people that wouldn't otherwise be reachable.
That's why I work in genre. Because I feel like that it's such a key way to get people to talk about things in a way that they wouldn't be otherwise. Because when people are, I just don't believe that you can change people's opinions 180 degrees. You change people's opinions by 2 degrees, by 3 degrees. And the way you do that is by getting them to converse about things and exposing them to things that they wouldn't normally be exposed to. And it's by kind of infusing these ideas into the world that they want to be in already. So if somebody wants to go see a genre movie, then you infuse a social context into it, and they're willing to hear it because they're already open, because they're doing something that they want to do. And so all of a sudden you have a platform to talk to somebody that you wouldn't have otherwise. Film and television is our national dialogue now. People don't read books. People don't read magazines. Film and television is our national dialogue. And so to me, the question has become on a much bigger level, if that is our national dialogue, how do you use it? How do you use that as a platform for social change then? And really, that genre world to me is the place that it's going to happen.
That's very insightful. You should run for office.
Oh, I've got way too many skeletons in my closet to do that. I'll just keep making genre films.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I got you. So what's your preferred genre? I assume horror, or do you have a preferred genre that you haven't worked in yet?
My kind of big fascination is in the world of technology. So I really love like sci-fi things. The second narrative film I made is a sci-fi film. That's kind of my big fascination. All of it, like horror, action, thriller, sci-fi. It just depends on what I'm interested in talking about, like where that falls out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I love anything that gets your adrenaline pumping, anything where you walk out having that feeling that you ran a little bit of a race while you were sitting down. Feels great to me.
Oh, we need more of that, too. We need a lot of that.
Yeah. I agree. I completely agree.
Well, first thing, I skipped right by the first question I ask everybody that comes on. So I got to go backwards. What?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, no, that was great conversation. Nobody ever wants to open up on that kind of stuff. That's fantastic. What was the moment that you decided to be a filmmaker? Was there a moment when it just hit you?
I don't know that I've decided to be a filmmaker.
All right.
I have always been kind of a weird storyteller. And it's taken a lot of different forms in my life. And I think that one of the reasons I work in film is kind of what we were talking about, is that I feel like it's the place that stories reach the most people right now. Mm-hmm. And so that is, to me, really important. It's important that if you have a story to tell, that it actually reaches people. I'm not interested. To me, it's a question of, does art matter within the context of nobody seeing it? And it does, but only to the people that see it. And so if you want to actually affect change through any kind of art, how do you do that? Mm-hmm. It's by reaching people. And so therefore, you then have to say, okay, how do I do that? Being somebody who tells stories, because I do a bunch of different things. I'm also, you know, I'm also a photographer. I also, you know, I've published short stories. I do a bunch of different kind of types of storytelling. But to me, film is the one that is the easiest to reach people through because it's accessible. It's what people want to see. It's what people are willing to give their time to. And it's a contract with an audience for a specific period of time. And that's a really powerful thing, you know, in a world where that is the thing that we are constantly pressured for, is we don't have time to do anything. We are completely overloaded. Film is a time contract that people give you and say, I am willing to go with you on this ride for 80 to 120 minutes.
I'm glad you say that, because that's the sweet spot. Everybody says like 2 hours. Nah, 100, an hour and a half.
No. I'm not making the Lord of the Rings. That to me is a really powerful thing, that people are willing to do that with film. It then puts a responsibility back on me to do something really great for them during that time. Because if you're willing to give me that time, I have to be willing to give you something that's worth it. So then kind of backing up, so I guess at some point I realized, probably in my like early to mid 20s, that was a place I was going to, with some of the stories I wanted to tell, fall into, in order to tell stories in a way that would get to enough people. So that, I don't know that there was kind of like one moment of it, but that was kind of the genesis of me understanding where I needed to fall in the world of storytelling.
And you've done, well, so I want to get to that in a second. Did I read this right? You went to Stanford? Is that true?
I did. Yes.
Well,
that is true.
You're fancy. How do you?
I'm fancy.
You are fancy.
I'm not fancy.
I hear it's a good school. I mean, it's better than community college by some accounts.
I hear it's a good school too. No, I enjoyed it there, and you know, it was the right place for me, because they allow you to be a weirdo there. Like, it's not an Ivy League school in the traditional sense, where they allow you to really kind of find your own way and do strange things and experiment. And you're surrounded by people who are very creative, and they really want you to figure out what you love in a different way than a lot of kind of Ivy League experiences that I know people have gone through do. So it was the right experience for me.
So how do you find your way into the film business? I saw you have numerous producer credits. Did you start with production, with producing, or?
Sometimes you just fall into things, you know? And I ended up with some opportunities that I just that I just ended up falling into in a lot of ways. I got an opportunity at Disney at Sherry Singer's company and came up under her, and she was fantastic to me. Mm-hmm. Then ended up, you know, running the film side of a very small independent company, and realized at that point that if I was going to do that, I was going to do it for myself, not for somebody else. And was able to, you know, raise the money to open my own company with a business partner. I knew kind of very early on that if I wanted to creatively tell stories on the writing and directing side, being kind of this weird outsider with no, you know, I'm not a Hollywood type. I don't have any kind of quote unquote connections in the industry. I come from, you know, kind of nothing coming in. I knew that what I was going to have to do was be able to show people that I knew how to make movies and then say, okay, I can make movies. Now trust me to write and direct them. And so that's why I was producing, is I could then show people, look, you can trust me to make movies because I've already shown you that I can. Let me do the creative on them also. To be able to do that crossover.
Right.
Because I'm nothing if not practical. So that was kind of that process for me, which has, you know, seems to have worked out okay.
Yeah. And can you do, you know, most of our audience, they understand what directors do and actors do, obviously, and writers. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people don't understand exactly what a producer does. Can you explain what a producer does, especially in independent productions where it's a lot different than it is in, you know, big budgets?
Sure. So an independent producer does everything. An independent producer does everything from find the project. So the only person that is usually on a project longer than the producer is the writer.
Mm-hmm.
Where a producer finds a script, puts the money together, gets together the entire team, shepherds the project all the way through production, fixes all the problems that are there, puts together the entire post-production team, finds distribution, shepherds it through the festival process if it's a festival film, that, you know, sets up all of your like revenue capturing entities, audits the distributor to make sure the revenue that you're supposed to get is coming in, everything. A producer literally from start to finish makes the film. To be honest, like that's why when Best Picture is announced at the Oscars, that's why the producers win that Oscar, because the producer is who has done everything on the film. Although, you know, it's often the director's vision visually and storytelling wise, the actual putting together and having that film made, that's the producer on it. They're who gets shit done.
That's the best way to put it right there. They get shit done.
Exactly. But if you're doing your job right, and this is what I always say, is like, if you're doing your job right as a producer, people should say, what are you even doing? Because you should do it so invisibly that people should be like, are you even doing anything?
Good call. That's the best way to put it. I mean, a lot of people have asked me through the course of the show and the website and the podcast and everything else, what do producers do? And you can explain it, but I think it's better to come from someone that does it all the time than somebody who, you know, those who can't do interview, so to speak.
Oh, but it's fun, you know, and I will say I don't enjoy producing the things that I direct because it's just too much, but I really enjoy producing the things because I produce for a couple of other writer directors that I love, you know, and I love producing for those guys, the people that I really believe in and like, you know, want to make their movies. I love that process of making movies with writers and directors that I care about and believe in their vision. It's an amazing, amazing thing to be able to facilitate somebody else's vision also, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's such a different thing from the creative side of writing and directing that, like, for me, it's a really great balance to be able to do both. Like the writing and directing puts you in this incredibly creative headspace, and then the producing puts you in a totally different headspace. So it's this really fantastic balance to be able to do both. So, you know, to be doing one day and the other the next.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I bet that's a huge challenge, especially when you're trying to do everything else.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally.
Well, let's talk about Ascent to Hell, which, you know, it's got one of those badass titles, Ascent to Hell. That's how you hear it whenever, you know. It was recently released on video on demand and home video. Where did the title come from? I assume it's horror productions a lot of times go through multiple titles. Was it always the title, or?
It was not always the title. The title, it started out, the title was The Factory, and then we redid the title for release. God, I don't know. We went through, you know, we gave our distributor like 20 different titles, and that was the one they liked. it's very kind of like powerful and commanding, that title, isn't it?
It is. You hear it and you have to say it in a deeper voice. I feel like I'm not masculine enough to even utter it. That's what I feel like.
For sure. Like, whenever you say it, your voice drops an octave, and it's amazing.
Now, and you've been working on this. It seems like it's had quite a path to get to release. What has that been like for you? Now that your movie's finally out there in the, a relief.
It is a relief. And so this is, you know, this is the kind of independent production story that you go through sometimes, where this is a film that was, we shot it. Oh, we took it around to distributors. We got multiple offers on it. We picked a distributor that gave us an offer on it,
mm-hmm.
set a release date. And that distributor then defaulted on the offer.
Mm.
We had to pull the film back from that distributor. I think that distributor at this point has actually folded. I'm not positive. And then we had to resell the film in the marketplace. It's been a process. And that's a very, you know, that's a very kind of frustrating thing for a filmmaker to go through when you've made something. And we originally had a release date of October 2015 for this film. And the original distributor defaulted in September 2015.
Ooh, ouch.
And we had, a month before it was supposed to release, the distributor defaulted. We had to, at that point, pull it back, which means then in early 2016 was when we were taking it back out to distributors, which is why then it now didn't come out till 2017. That's an insane long time to have a project that you've made. And, you know, like my entire cast and crew has been like, all right, let's go. Oh, wait a minute. Now it's not coming out. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
So it's been a process. And so it's just for us, you know, it's so thrilling to finally have it out and be able to say, no, this thing that we made, like, it's not that, because there's also, there's very much a stigma, right, to things not being out once you make them. And it's been very frustrating to be like, oh, no, it's not because of what the project is. It's this whole other thing that happened that has nothing to do with the project. But sometimes people don't understand that. And so it's then been kind of a like frustrating piece of the industry that this thing's been going on. But, you know, it's now out, it's in the world, and, you know, knock on wood, it seems to be going pretty well.
Hey, you got it. You made it. You made it.
Exactly.
Well, in the film Azura Sky, did I say her name right? Azura?
Azura.
Okay. Azura Sky plays a realtor attempting to sell a factory that was once the site of a fire in 1911 that killed garment workers. Why did you decide this was the story you wanted to be your springboard for your film?
My creative partner, Isaac Borg, and I, this all came about because we were just reading about all of these garment factory fires that were happening in Bangladesh at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there were these, there was just these, like, this rash of fires that were killing hundreds and hundreds of workers. And it was the exact same thing that had happened in the early 1900s in the United States that essentially led to unionization and a lot of the OSHA regulations. And we started, we just started talking about the how crazy it is that something that happened 100 years ago here has not led to a globalization of any kind of safety measures at this point.
Gotcha.
And then we just started spinning this idea of the story, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really the fact that we were just reading about these things happening overseas and started talking about the insanity of what was going on, these people being just trapped and burned to death, and how terrifying it was that people would walk into work just another day going into work. This is what they do. And they couldn't be guaranteed that they were going to leave at the end of the day alive.
Wow. That's insanity.
Yeah. That's where the entire film comes from, is just, and it, there was just this period of time where it was in the news constantly because there was a rash of them that were going on overseas. And that's when we started conceptualizing the film.
That's an interesting way to pick your story from. That's really, well, that goes back to what you were talking about earlier too. So
yeah. And again, like, that to me is kind of the interesting thing about what you can do with these films, right? Is that, look, you may not have known that, right? And now you do.
No, I had no idea about it until the movie. Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. So the Triangle Factory fire, which is, you know, the fire that really started the process of unionization in the garment factories in New York, you know, when that happened, that was one of the times, and one of the things I really like about the film coming out, particularly now, is that was one of the times that women particularly got together and made a huge social change in the fabric of American society too. And so to me, it's really interesting. You know, sometimes everything works out for the best, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the film was released now rather than when it was originally supposed to be released, it actually ends up feeling even more relevant that it was released this year because of what's happening in society now. And it feels like we need to hear about those times when women have been able to change what's happening in society now more than we did before.
Hallelujah to that. Might be an understatement. Moving on to William Ryle. He plays the lead specter who can singe you with his demon ET finger. I really like that. That was very cool.
I adore him.
I loved his look. How long did that take?
That took about 2.5 hours every day to put him in makeup.
In makeup? That was very cool. And where did the idea come from? Because basically what he can do is he's a specter, but if he points a certain direction, he's catching you on fire. He's casting fire through his fingers, basically. He's a demon from hell, so to speak, I would argue.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is that where the power comes from?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we kind of had this idea that, you know, whenever you're building your world, right?
Mm-hmm.
It, you have to say, okay, you know, who's your big bad and what can they do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And why? Who's your big bad, what can they do, and why? And so when we were building this world, it was this idea of like, okay, so the owner of the factory, we knew we wanted to be our big bad, but then we wanted to say, okay, why is he still there? Number one,
mm-hmm.
He's still there because in his mind, he's still forcing these people to work. Well, in the world of what happened, he was trapping them, and the tragedy happened because he was forcing them to work, and they would lock the doors and ignore safety measures to make sure that they couldn't take breaks, that they couldn't do those sorts of things. It's like, okay, well, then at the point that this fire happens, this fire then imbues him with the power of fire.
Mm.
And so that was kind of the genesis of giving him that power.
Gotcha. That's very, very cool. And I don't want to say much more about that because I don't want to spoil anything.
Fair enough.
Well, there's a cool little twist at the end. So what do you think about where did the cast come from? Where did you decide you wanted Azura and William and the rest of them? How did you find your right actors?
Okay. So my casting director found Azura for me, she was coming off American Horror Story at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we got on the phone. I had already flown to New York to start scouting locations. And we got on the phone. And the minute we got on the phone, we just knew, like, within 5 minutes, we were talking the same language about what that character should be. We ended up on the phone for about 2 hours for our first conversation. I called my casting doctors, and I was like, I'm done. We don't need to look for anybody else. Well, I'm done. That's her.
Aw, that's the way to do it right there.
Exactly. She was everything I could have asked for a lead actress. She, beyond being an amazing actress and exactly what I wanted as the character, mm-hmm. on set, she is delightful to work with. The other actors loved her. She is so kind and generous as an actress, and just absolutely lovely.
She's been around for a while. I mean, she's been in a ton of projects.
She is so underutilized. I have to tell you, everybody that I know that has worked with her says the exact same thing, where it's like, I don't know why she's not a huge star. I have no idea. She's amazing.
She was on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That's a true story.
She was. I know.
Speaking of big bads, just to connect it all.
So then the next person to come on board was actually Bill Sage. Bill, I had just seen in a couple of films, and I went to my casting directors and I said, I really want this guy. He's based out of New York, and I took him out to dinner and was incredibly fortunate that he came on, because I needed, for his particular character, I needed somebody who was, while a terrible guy, I needed somebody that even in being a terrible guy, you still didn't hate. Because if you hated him, I think the whole thing breaks down.
Right.
So he had to have that quality that I feel like Bill does so well of even when he's doing things that you're like, oh, that's a terrible thing to do, you still like him. And he was coming off of a film called We Are What We Are at the time, where, if you've seen it, he's doing terrible things. It's a Jim Nichol film, which I think Jim is just brilliant. He's doing kinds of terrible things. And still, at the end of the day, you like his character.
Jim Nichol did Cold in July, right? He did the, mm-hmm. Cold in July. Yeah, I know who he is. He's a good director, yeah.
Oh, he's excellent. He's excellent. Yeah, and if you haven't seen We Are What We Are, it's fantastic. You should take a look at it. Like, that was what I had seen in Bill that made me want him to come in for that. Then when we were looking for our Spectre, who ended up being Bill Lyle. Bill is, oh my God, I think he's 6'7". And I had asked for somebody incredibly imposing.
Mm-hmm.
My casting directors knew him because he's a Broadway actor. He's actually, I think he's in Wicked right now on Broadway.
That's interesting.
Yeah, he's phenomenally talented. Phenomenally talented. He's the nicest, loveliest guy with this like huge singing voice and all of this stuff. but he's enormous, like just so, so tall. You can see it in that one scene when he's standing across from Azura. And, you know, Azura is not a short girl. She's 5'7", 5'8".
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a foot of height on her.
That's and towering. So, towering over her.
Towering. I mean, he's towering over everybody. Every time he's around, he's just towering over them. He came in, and when he came in, just his physicality with this guy, I was like, oh, done. He's my guy. And, you know, then I had to talk to him and be like, you know, you're going to be in makeup for a while. Every time you come in, it's going to be a while. And you know, having been on Broadway and doing some of those things, he was like, oh, I've done that. Don't, it's fine. And so I really liked him having that background also, where he wasn't concerned about being in the makeup chair for a very lengthy period of time every time he came in, you mm-hmm. know? And then once I had those pieces, then I could play, you know, then I had my major pieces and I could kind of play with some different parts. And I got really lucky with my other guys who came in. John Hennigan, who is just so fun, you know, who I didn't know. I knew his manager, and his manager called me up and he's like, John read the script and would just love to come in and play the bodyguard. And he came in and is just such a fun character. Like, you know, John just as a human is bigger than life, you know, and just came in and was that guy, was just a bigger than life bodyguard. And, you know, Taylor Black, who is just a great actress, who is so far away from that, it, as a human being, is so far away from that character of Mary. Like, she's so down to earth and lovely. And then for me to be like, be a rich snob, you know, she got to just kind of dive into that and have fun. And then Slate, who, Slate physically was not at all what I pictured for, you know, my bald actor. It was not at all what I pictured for that character. And he came in and auditioned and knocked it out of the park so much that I was just done. I was like, he walked out of the room and I was like, that's my guy. He didn't even, I don't even think I even brought him in for a callback. I think when he came in an audition, I think I cast him off of his first lead. And then Caleb, my romantic lead in it, Caleb actually, that was his first lead in anything. He was really, really green when we cast him. And he's done a bunch of stuff since that. But he was just, you know, the casting directors were like, you've got to see this guy. Like, we know he hasn't done a lot, but we've brought him in for a couple of things. He's so good. And he came in and I was like, man, this guy's really talented. And when Azura flew out to New York and I had them read together and I was like, oh, this just works with the two of them. So I got very lucky with that group of guys.
And now that the movie is all wrapped and out there, I mean, what are your plans to do next? I mean, what is the next, are you going to do another genre piece? I know you got the app, right? Is that completed?
Yeah. Well, no. So that one we are just finishing post-production on. So we're finishing the special effects in the next, like, I think we have like two more special effects to finish up. So hopefully in the next like 2 or 3 weeks, and then we'll take that around for sales.
Now tell people what that's about.
So that gets into what I was saying before. Like mm-hmm. I have this kind of interest in the idea of technology and what our problems with technology are. So that's about a guy who creates an app that puts good into the world through what it does for you. So it's an app on your phone that when you interact with it, it gives you a sense of peace and happiness and joy. And so he creates this app and it starts really changing the world, changing the way people operate in the world. But the problem is he finds out that in order to get the app to run properly, he has to start doing more and more terrible things in order to get it to run properly at the scale he needs it to. And so it becomes really kind of this moralistic question of, at what point have you crossed a line? Like, where is that line of when is the good outweighed? You know, and how do you make those decisions of where good and bad we fall out? And how do we deal with, I firmly believe that as humans, we currently have a problem in that our human evolution has not caught up to our technological evolution. And so we've done this thing with technology where it's outpaced us. And now we're trying to figure out how to speed up our human evolution to match up with it. And we haven't done it yet.
Right.
And so there's this thing of that push and pull of how do we force ourselves to do that? Can we force ourselves to do that? So that's what that film, you know, we'll take that around for sales. Hopefully we'll get a good release on that.
And Ascent to Hell right now is available. So people can get it right now. It's on video on demand. It's on DVD and Blu-ray.
Yes.
So it's out there.
Yeah, Gravitas put it out for us. So Gravitas is the distributor on that. Then I don't know that I can talk about it yet because the deal's not inked. But
it's one of those.
I just got brought on to do something, but the deal is not inked, so I don't know that I can talk about it.
Well, would it be director or producer? Yeah, director?
Writer and director.
Nice.
And director. So nice. I should be able to talk about it within like a week. So if you follow me on Twitter, I should be able to announce it.
There you go. What's your Twitter address?
Dina Nicole.
There you go.
Beyond that, I'm finishing up, like I said, I'm also a photographer, and I'm finishing up a photo project that looks like it'll be showing in a gallery in New York in the fall. Yeah, a bunch of different stuff. A lot of stuff. That's what I'm in the middle of.
It's a lot of stuff. You're kind of all over the map right now. I mean, you're doing horror, you're doing sci-fi, you're doing photography.
Well, it's all in the same world, because even the photography project is a genre photography project too.
That's interesting.
So that falls again in that world of what happens when technology and humanity don't match up correctly.
We end up in the Matrix, I believe.
We do. I believe that's correct. I believe that you're absolutely correct with that.
Hopefully it'll be the Keanu Reeves will save us.
You know, I've always thought that. I've always thought that's his role in the world, is that he will save us.
I mean, really, is there anybody else who could?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
That's awesome. I know I got to let you go here soon. But before I do, have to mention, you are the only person who can vouch, because very few people have actually heard the details behind the Jamie Lannister story, and I'm not going to share them here because you gotta be privileged to know that it's the case. But can you vouch that I did absolutely humiliate my friend Brian in your presence with that man?
100%.
Thank you. That's all I wanted.
100% you did.
Some people that I have managed to tell that story to, and it's a very select few, but they have all said, no, you did not. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. It happened.
Whoever is saying that to you, that you did not, they are incorrect. You 100% did.
Love it. And I feel bad because I know he's got an actual name, but I just think Jamie Lannister is much easier to say.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me ask you a question. So when the app comes out, will you come back and you can promote it again? You can promote the next one?
Absolutely.
Oh, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, thanks for coming on. I love that you're open to talk about not only your own movie, but other movies. And that's a really interesting perspective where you mentioned that genre is a way to reach people with messages that normally wouldn't respond to messages. Because as much as I talk about movies, I've never looked at it quite from that perspective.
Well, now you will, though, right?
Every time. And it's going to kill me because every time I see something, I'm probably going to see a message in it. Like, what is Jason Voorhees trying to say right now?
Now you're going to be shaking your fist being like, why are there messages in all of my movies?
Exactly. I just wanted him to kill that guy. That's it.
Oh, but no, it's true. And like, so like my, one of my big films that got me into genre entirely is The Thing, you know?
Oh, good and call. Yes. Kurt Russell. What?
Of course. That to me is kind of the epitome of what you can do with that, because all that movie is about, that movie has nothing to do with horror or genre. That movie is about how do we as humans figure out how to trust other humans. That's all that movie's about. So
I agree with
it's
that.
A sociological study. It is not a horror movie. It is a scary horror movie that is not a horror movie. It's a sociological study. And like, again, like that to me is what genre can do, is it can get people to talk about what are the things that allow us to trust other humans in a room of people who wouldn't normally sit and talk about that, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right. I mean, that's a really good point, because The Thing, I agree with you on that. A lot of people don't see it as that, but if you really look at it, I mean, it's a small character drama with horrific elements is really what they're trying
exactly.
to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's a fantastic movie. Because it has Kurt Russell.
It's a fantastic movie, completely.
It has the best hair of the 80s.
It 100% has the best hair of the 80s.
Well, I got to let you go, but I wanted to say thank you so much for coming by. I really sincerely do appreciate it.
I appreciate the opportunity. All right, we'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Take care.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye-bye. Boom, there you go. That was our interview with Dina Hysel. And remember, she's on Twitter at Dina Nicole, DenaNicole. That's DenaNicole. So go follow her there and you will see where she goes next. Again, her movie was Ascent to Hell. It's available on video on demand, Blu-ray, and DVD. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview. I think Dina was great to talk to. Hopefully she'll come back for her next thing. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider Podcast. We try to bring you interviews with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema whenever we can. So I really hope you enjoyed this one. And remember to subscribe, review us on iTunes, Spotify, your podcast app of choice, our app, whatever you use. Just let us know what you think of it. Our normal show has a new episode each week and is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater, or you sit comfortably on your couch and watch Ascent to Hell, buy popcorn.